Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 29, Teaching the Saints, Part 1. Those of you who participated in last year's online Grade 1 Conference may recall my talking about how fairy tales, which Rudolf Steiner suggested were a good thing to teach in Grade 1, which in his day were as absolutely accepted and loved and gave people a warm, fuzzy feeling, though Germans in that time would not have spoken that way about themselves. Anyway, all was well and good. Wonderful, of course. You know, what could be wrong with that? In our time, fairy tales have become quite controversial, and you can expect that there will be parents objecting to the sexism, violence, stereotypes, anti-Semitism, and a whole range of other things to be found in the fairy tales. Those of you, and I hope it's all of you, who will be taking the Grade 3 online conference next year, will hear me speak about, yes, don't be shocked, the Bible, at least particularly the Hebrew Bible, the Hebrew Scriptures. Same thing. You know, in Steiner's day, I mean, of course all school children learned the Bible. It was just a matter of when it was going to be taught. And of course, Steiner had deeper reasons for teaching it than just to make everybody, good religious people. In our time, you can expect parents will bring up issues of, gosh, sexism, racism, stereotypes, violence, anti-Semitism, yes, even in the Hebrew Scriptures, because of course they fought against a whole lot of other people who were Semitic, right? Okay, we won't go on to that one. Anyway, okay, here's your interlude, Grade 2, Fables. Come on, nobody has issues with that. I mean, even I think animal rights activists can accept that the fables are, that the stereotypes about animals are unlikely to encourage people to try to perform genocide on wolves or something like that. I mean, there are people wishing that, but it's not because they've learned about wolves through fables. So that's basically okay. Saint stories. Well, of course, we still to this day, even non-religious people, when they want to compliment somebody, will often say, what a saint. He has the patience of a saint. Very typical comment. We'll learn more about that. Or, she was just saintly in that situation, and everybody else was going a little bit crazy. We use that term, so if children are learning about people who actually were saints and where all of those cliches come from, and you see this is a year of kind of getting to the heart of many cliches from fables and saint stories, what could be wrong? Well, I'm afraid you're going to have to be ready for objections based on, sexism and stereotypes and anti-Semitism and racism and whatever. It's amazing. It's really amazing. Pretty much nothing that we teach anymore is not going to offend somebody. And it's not to say, they just take offense at anything. There are, in fact, some very good reasons that there are some stories of saints that could be very offensive to people for very good reasons. And you don't want to go out of your way to, teach certain things that are only going to upset people, so that whatever good effect some of these stories might have on children, the bad effects that they'll have on the community of the class are so much worse that it's the law of diminishing returns. And I'll, try to give you some suggestions there. But no matter how many suggestions I give you, And no matter, you know, how much we try to find the most sanitized and kind of, you know, loving, non-controversial Disney version qualities in stories, it's still going to offend people. In fact, I would actually say, in my own experience as a teacher and as a Waldorf consultant, I have found that stories of the saints are the hardest ones for people to get around to teach, and they are the hardest ones for people to find a relation to themselves. And when I started teaching back in the younger children, I started with a fifth grade in the 70s, but got into second grade in 1982, I was really blindsided by this. You know, I just, summer came and I was talking to colleagues about, you know, what were their sources for this or that story in second grade and what saint did they start with and why, and do you try to follow the saint's days? And it was clear to me, number one, that most of my colleagues, some of whom were very experienced and very respected teachers, actually taught as few saints as they possibly could, and that even when they taught them, they sort of, you know, clenched their teeth, and it was kind of painful for them to do it, and that some, even back then, pretty much didn't teach any saints at all. Their year was lots of fables, and you certainly have your choice of fables to teach. You could, you know, teach two a day for the whole school year and still have plenty left over. Why is this? What were the reasons? What's wrong with the saints? Well, here are the reasons that I was given. Teachers who were raised Protestant, which is to this day, I would say, a majority of Waldorf teachers in North America, they said that, you know, when they went to Sunday school, or if they weren't terribly observant, when at least, you know, they spoke to others in their church now and then, or their parents spoke to them about it, that the saints were idols, that it was a kind of idolatry, that like so many other pagan practices, according to those who told them about this stuff, I'm not saying I agree with it, that this was all stuff that the Catholic Church subsumed so that they could win over converts without a lot of pain. They just took on the old holidays, the old pagan holidays, and found a saint to substitute for that. Or they took on the old pagan beliefs about animism and the magical relationship that certain human beings could have to disincarnate spirits and how they could work in nature in magical ways. Oh, yeah, yeah, that saint did that, right, right, sure, sure, fine. Okay, come on in, join us. We're not going to take any of your old beliefs around away. We're just going to give you new names. And that, in fact, also, they said, and with some justification, that when people in the old church, in the medieval church, started to think more independently and tried to find a more individual relationship to God and the divine world, and here we could say these were sort of harbingers of Martin Luther, that they were deemed heretics. And the individuals who kind of rounded up the most heretics and tortured them most horribly and, you know, sent them to their death post-haste, they were often sainted and considered, you know, great helpers of the church. Saint Dominic is often accused of this. So anyway, for Protestant teachers, this was really hard. It was overcoming feelings, ideas, concepts, and so on that were implanted in their etheric body when they were very young. that saints are idols, and, you know, of course, that there are images of saints and little models of saints, and they're arrayed around a child's bed, and the child looks to that saint and kind of worships it because Mary and Jesus are much too hard to reach, and God is completely out of bounds. So the saints become the idols that supposedly, you know, Western religions overthrew. Okay, so Protestant teachers have a hard time with them. Maybe you will find, as you work with the saints, if you have a Protestant background, that you too start to struggle a little bit with some of these beings. And, you know, just be aware of that. Jewish teachers, who constitute a significant number of teachers in Waldorf schools in North America, you know, a larger share than, let's say, the Jewish population at large, as is true with Nobel Prize winners, too. Anyway, of course, they, and I can testify to this myself, having been raised Jewish and bar mitzvahed at age 13, also, you have a very, very hard time with the images of the saints alone, because Judaism is iconoclastic, that, you know, images are not to be worshipped. There are no graven images. And very observant Judaism, not a mystical stream of Judaism like Hasidim, but, you know, straightforward Orthodox Judaism, there are no images and there are no secondary figures who bear divine qualities. You have basically God and then the rest of us. And even the patriarchs and, you know, exceptional figures like King David or the prophets, still, they are not looked at in the same way that observant Catholics would look at particular saints. And here again, the issues of persecution of the Jews. Sometimes saints' days were chosen for the very worst persecutions and pogroms in Russia and so on. So Jewish teachers often have a very, very hard time approaching the subject of the saints. And, you know, when you are going looking for sources, Catholic schools are actually a good place to go because they're throwing out all of the textbooks, the old textbooks, and lots of stories of saints there. So, you know, oh my gosh, it's, you know, like going to your old persecutors and saying, I'd love to see records of the persecutions, you know, and the heroes who waged them. It's often very, very hard. Number three, and this was the big shocker to me, a minority of Waldorf teachers were raised Catholic. There is to this day still not a terribly harmonious and cozy relationship between Catholicism and Waldorf education. And it's not just because we're competing for children who might otherwise go to parochial schools. So here, these two were teachers who didn't want to have anything to do with the saints because they felt they just got them shoved down their throats all their years in Catholic school. You know, that every math problem involved a saint doing something or other. Every grammar example, a saint was active or passive or whatever, was the subject or the object or both. And on it went. And of course, the saints were often seen as individuals who also could punish, who were keeping their eyes on you. I mean, it depended a bit on your teacher and how they might have used the saints far beyond what church doctrine actually would have spoken of. So they have had their fill, and they didn't want to teach it either. Oh my God, literally and figuratively, who was left? Who was going to teach the saints? only one group of teachers, the atheists or the anthroposophists, who kind of, you know, they believe in anything. I mean, they're easy to convince of the sanctity and divinity of anything. It's kind of funny, but it's kind of sad. Now, don't forget, Rudolf Steiner himself was what we would call today a lapsed Catholic. And in fact, he was accused again and again in his lifetime of still being a Catholic, of being a Jesuit, of being a secret agent of the church, trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the good German Protestant people. When he, at the request of Lutheran theological students, he was asked to try to renew the Christian church, and he founded something, or helped a group to found. He didn't do it personally, but he gave the rituals and the cultists of what is today called the Christian community. That has been called by some people the Catholic Church with a Lutheran face, or the Lutheran Church with a Catholic face, or one or the other, but definitely, again and again, that's been brought up to prove that Steiner was trying to kind of bring Catholicism into the purity of the Lutheran Church in Germany. So anyway, even in his time, this issue was a big one, but still, you know, Steiner could bring these stories once again, not to convert anybody, but simply because this he believed, and I think if and when you teach the saints, you'll see for yourself that this actually is giving the children, like the fables, something that they not only want, but something that they really need at this age. And I would just say that if there are things in your own biography that run counter to this, that make this a struggle, it may be worth fighting the good fight in a way. You may find something within you really being transformed, really being brought to new life and new perspectives opening by taking up these stories seriously. You're doing it for your children, not for yourself, but there may be collateral value, hopefully not collateral damage, for you in taking up these stories. I would say the same thing next year for the stories of the Hebrew Scriptures, which also are no longer necessarily comfortable reading and a comfortable experience teaching for teachers. That Steiner, in his time, all this stuff was basically in the comfort zone of the people he appointed to teach, and in the culture of Stuttgart, Germany altogether. Stuttgart, in fact, is in a Catholic part of Germany, so, you know, the saints even might have given a little bit more credibility to what the Waldorf school was doing. But today, it's way out of our comfort zone, a whole lot that we're going to teach. Norse mythology, too, is no longer everybody's cup of tea when you really get to study it. And the, you know, kind of Eurocentricity of the history that's done, all these things are challenging for us, and that's fine, because they're part of our own path of inner development. I'll be speaking about that in later lectures. So I would say to you, you know, try to take up the work with the saints and see where and how you yourself can really be challenged and perhaps changed and perhaps surprised at what these stories are able to bring to you.